Thanks, Paul.
Hello, everybody. Hello. My name's Scott, for those of you who I haven't met. So I want to start tonight off by doing this. This is what I've done in a Bible study before. We would always meet, and, you know, before we start anything, we give a praise and a prayer, right? And this is either, like, you know, once a week or, you know, until we last saw. So quickly, a praise. Our entire house is employed as of yesterday. Very good news. Yes, my brother, who I'm living with, got a job, landed it yesterday. So very exciting news. Yeah, so that's great news. Prayer is that tonight I'm going to be talking about, you know, apologetics and, you know, which is... Hello, Dan. Yeah. Okay, so tonight I'm going to be talking about apologetics, a tough question, and a prayer is that you would listen objectively and kind of reserve your own judgment on this at the door. And, you know, I say this because it's very easy with a lot of apologetics topics to kind of develop this pick and choose religion by saying, okay, you know, let's get all these big questions, and I like this answer to this question, this answer to this question, this answer to this question. So I have this idea of what Christianity is, who God is, etc., and therefore that's the religion that I own. That's the relationship that I have. So I really challenge you guys to, you know, think about this, and I wrote this on the discussion questions for later too. Think about, what do you believe, right, for this topic? What do you want to believe? What is, like, the most appealing, you know, of the many options that there are? And, and what do you think is true? Right? So, those are three that could be the exact same, but they could also be very different. Right? So, that is something that I want you to keep in mind. And I wanted to, you know, say that initially before I continue on, because... it's good to keep that in the back of your mind when I talk about options of this particular topic. All right. So, I wanted to start off by defining a couple of things. Knowledge and determination. And those are two things that I feel like need to be defined because... is about to get pretty messy in terms of, like, philosophy. And, you know, in order to get on the same page, it's good to, you know, have an idea of what, at least agree on this, if nothing else. So, when I talk about knowledge, right, I'm talking about that, okay, I'm going to use this as an example. Let's just say right now, if I pulled out $1,000 straight out of my pocket and put it right here, right? And I said, okay, the first person to run up here and grab this money gets to keep it. I can confidently say that I know that somebody will be $1,000 richer by the end of this exercise. Okay? To my human capacity, I will confidently say that I know that one of you guys will grab this. Right? That is different than determination, in which determination, just because I pull the cash out and say, okay, the first one to grab this gets to keep it, does not determine the fact that I am forcing you guys to come up here and take the money. You follow me so far? So those are two, you know, contentions that I'm starting with and using as kind of a base. So the big question of the evening is, does God decide everything that happens in this world, or do we have free will? Okay? Does God decide everything that happens in this world, or do we have free will? So, just really quickly, if nothing else for my amusement, raise your hand right now if you think God decides everything that happens. Okay. Okay, okay. Good. Now raise your hand if you think we have free will.
I do what I want.
Okay. So that's good. Maybe 60-40. Maybe 70-30, right? On the free will side of things. And, okay. Yeah. Mainly for my amusement, right? So keep that in mind as we go forward. We are split on this, and a lot of Christians do split on this topic. But right now, what I'm going to attempt to do is go down, you know, a couple of different options in which, you know, are all seen in, or can all be seen in a Christian light. I'm going to start with some philosophical understandings of foreknowledge, or, you know, God's knowledge of the future, and then move on to Christian understanding of God's foreknowledge. They're not, you know, mutually exclusive, but, you know, they're just different kinds of views that you can have. First things first, I'm going to go with the perceptualist view of foreknowledge. And what this means is this is a, you know, very anthropomorphic view. It's kind of the more traditional, like, Calvinist view, if you will, that was kind of held by, you know, John Calvin, or who else had this view? The kind of very traditional view that God is up in the clouds and just kind of, like, you know, chilling, looking at everything, and very far removed from the human experience. You know, so he essentially sees the past, present, and future all at once, and kind of knows everything, right? So he can, you know, is like removed from the fourth dimension. Time is essentially an element to, it's just an illusion, it's like a human illusion, because God knows exactly where, you know, I mean, where we are in the present, but also where exactly we will be in the future. So that's the perceptualist view, right? God exists out of space and time, and he can see everything. Propositions exist in the present, and God can look at these and determine the truth values of each proposition. You follow so far? So, because he knows exactly the future, he knows the truth value of present propositions. Cool? Okay, that is one idea called the perceptualist view that I'm putting under the category of a philosophical understanding of foreknowledge. Another view is a conceptualist view of God's foreknowledge. And this is a much more bizarre view. It's the idea, it's like, it's kind of like there are just innate ideas. And everybody, like, so I'm gonna put it this way. This is a quote that Plato said. He said, "Education is not really acquiring or learning new truths, but is simply bringing it to consciousness the innate knowledge in which we already have." Think about that for a second. So essentially, you have the capability of X amount of knowledge, but the way that you gain knowledge is essentially it being revealed to you. So, you know what I mean? Like, if you, you know, you might be the greatest dancer in the world, but you don't know that. You know what I mean? Somebody has to give you that knowledge in order for you to realize that, and then you can have it. And then you can understand it. Or, you know, you might be capable, you get the idea, you may be capable of anything, and you won't know it until you gain that knowledge. Right? So that's a very different. And it's not, so this view is not really that plausible from a human perspective, right? I mean, like, it's a very bizarre concept. It's not, you know, that's just not really how humans work, really. But having said that, it is a plausible explanation for the way that God has knowledge. And that's kind of the direction that I'm taking it. The element of God's conceptuality, if that's something. So, to wrap this up, that means that God is capable of knowing all propositions, right? It's just that he also knows the truth value to all propositions, okay? So we have propositions in the present that in the perceptualist view are not really propositions because they're just a reality later on, you know, according to God. But in the conceptualist view, there are different propositions. Some of them just hold a different truth value. These are very, you know, bear with me here. Question.
Can you define truth value?
has absolute truth. Yeah, so we're talking about, from God's perspective, an absolute truth, right? Something, that's why I wanted to define knowledge at first, because it's kind of like, it gets a little fuzzy. So, knowing that, those are philosophical understandings of foreknowledge or God's knowledge of the future, just two different sides of which you could know, or you could, you know, kind of have an understanding of God's knowledge of the future. Now, there are different Christian understandings of God's foreknowledge, right? These are more geared towards people, you know, who have, you know, who are Christian, define it as you will, right? So, first one that I'm giving, you know, actually, I'm going to use my own discussion questions because I forget exactly what I wrote on here. The first one is the traditionalist view, right? So this is another kind of goes along the same lines as the first perceptualist view. John Calvin, St. Augustine, Jonathan Edwards, Calvinists, Reformed theology kind of view. This says that God's foreknowledge is based on his foreordination. His foreknowledge equals foreordination. Think about that for a second. That's kind of crazy. The fact that you, because you know, therefore you ordain it. Right? So, because I know what is happening in the future, I have essentially paved that path entirely with this view. Right? So this is entirely from the angle that God knows and determines, predestines everything, right? That is that angle, okay? Because God decrees that everything will come to pass, therefore he foreknows it. Everybody's looking very confused. Bear with me here. That is just the kind of, you know, traditional robust understanding of, you know, the, deemed it the traditional view. The fact that you're a Christian, you know God to know everything, determine everything. So that, you know, immediately is a little bit scary because it removes significant freedom from your life. If you think about it, no matter what you do at any point, it's like it was never your choice at the end of the day. Everything was originally God's exact plan, and that is what you are, like, following under. You know what I mean? You have that kind of, you know, robot-like mentality, right? I mean, you don't have that mentality, but you have that robot-like persona because you are under the spell of God, if you will. So that's the first one, the traditional view. The counter view to the traditional view is the open view. And this is essentially the fact that, or the, not the fact, but you know what I mean, the contention that God doesn't know the future and he doesn't determine it. Okay? So in this view, essentially God gambles. Okay? He's saying that, okay, I'm going to create these humans and I don't know what they're going to do, and I know they're probably going to act in this way, but I don't really know. I can't see into the future to figure out what exactly, you know, they're going to do. And I can't, you know, have the same, you know, knowledge that I do in the traditionalist view. So he's essentially rolling the dice. He thinks what he's going to do is what his plan is, right? Okay, so under the open view, the future is open and there aren't any truths that God knows about in the future. God has a degree of foreknowledge, but is essentially an anthropomorphic foreknowledge. So the knowledge that when I put the cash down on the table, you will come and take it. I know that as much as God knows that somebody will come and take it. You know what I mean? It's not a for certain, it's not an absolute truth, but I can, you know, I am willing to bet that that's the case. Okay. So, those two are kind of, you know, the extremes, if you will, on this topic, right? So you can have, you know, either one, and they're both kind of, you know, they're both kind of extreme. But instead of it being on, like, you know, linear and having each one on one end of the spectrum, it's almost like as if they were a full circle, because they do share a lot of common assumptions. One of them being the only way that God knows the future is if he determines it. Right? Makes sense. The only way that God knows the future is if he determines it. And that is the common assumption at which both extremes fall under. So, the big question is, does it have to be one or the other? Or could it be some kind of synthesis between everything, right? And so, like, here's the thing. If you choose one or the other, I feel that it's fairly easy to counter that just by looking at Scripture. So, for example, people with the more open view are challenged with the biblical examples that suppose the first view, and they kind of fall back onto the assumption that, okay, well, God just determines it. You know, so, like, for example, in Peter was foreordained to deny Jesus, which is kind of, you know, brings into some, you know, question of, well, was this plan really God's plan? When you have the second, the more open view, did God just gamble this was going to happen and think, oh, well, you know, good thing that Peter actually denied Jesus, or good thing that Judas actually betrayed Jesus, right? You know what I mean? There's biblical examples like this that kind of, you know, are tough to wrap your mind around if you have that open view. And so when you are challenged with that, it's very easy to kind of fall back into this, you know, saying that, okay, well, God just foreordained it. You know, fall back into the first traditionalist view. But what naturally follows is, you know, the question of, okay, well, people with the traditionalist view, when you talk about those exact same examples, or some of the other examples, especially in the Old Testament, were people foreordained by God to do sinful acts? You know, and that's a tough question. You know, that brings it to a whole other contention. So that makes it really difficult to kind of accept the first view as well. So this, the next, you know, two views that I have are kind of like a synthesis between the two, and they don't necessarily have to be one of the two extremes. First one that I'm going to talk about is the simple foreknowledge view. This essentially says that God doesn't determine the future. There's genuine free will, but God will know that it happens, or he will know what happens in advance. So, this is, I feel like, a little bit even more difficult to wrap your mind around. It says, God's knowledge, though chronologically prior to the event, is logically posterior to the event. Okay, I'm going to say that again. God's knowledge, though chronologically prior to the event, so God knows that the event is going to happen, is logically posterior to the event. So that's saying that God's knowledge doesn't determine the event. It's the event that determines what God foreknows. Kind of, sort of. So, in that realm, right, everybody completely has free will. But it's your free will and your choices that you make that determine what God's foreknowledge is. The illustration that was given around this view is that if you picture God as kind of like a perfect barometer, right? Like a barometer that's flawless. So the weather is not necessarily determined by God, but God will always tell you the exact weather, and he won't be wrong, ever. Right? So it's different from the traditionalist view where God's foreknowledge equals his foreordination, and because he knows it, he ordains it. This is saying that, okay, you have free will, you get to choose, but God will always be right in telling what happens. Okay? So, God kind of, you know, wakes up, if you will, and has knowledge of what is happening. You know, because it is happening. So, another, you know, synthesis view, if you will, is the middle knowledge view. And this is kind of, this piggybacks off of the simple foreknowledge view. And what this says is, it essentially expands the simple foreknowledge view, but explains how God has knowledge of the future. This essentially says, prior to God's knowledge, prior to God's decision to create the world, God knows how any free creature would freely choose in any circumstance that God might place him in. So, it kind of piggybacks off the idea that God is a gambler, that he, you know, creates these little humans and rolls the dice and says, okay, go make your own decisions, we'll see what happens. But he has knowledge of every single possibility that will happen, to the point where he knows by creating X human and X situation, they will have X result or XYZ result, right? So it's very similar, but at the same time, he's not gambling because he knows it already. So with this, God planned exactly what's happening before creation because he created it, but he did not foreordain it. He has foreknowledge of it, but he did not foreordain it. God can plan a universe and what he wants to have happen in it through the free decisions of his creation. So, yes.
How is that different from the first original theory?
That's different because he doesn't foreordain it. That's the difference. Is that word. The traditionalist view is assuming that God's foreknowledge equals his foreordination. This one is saying that he does not foreordain it. He just, yeah. There you go. He just knows what's going on. So, now that I've confused the crap out of you guys, quick summary. Okay. No, but seriously. We have the philosophical foreknowledge, perceptualist view, conceptualist view. Which got this, Ryan? All right, good. Perceptualist view and conceptualist view. You know, we got those two differences of, you know, God's the way that God understands knowledge and the way, like, you gain knowledge. Right? Those are the two differences. One where you had just have the innate knowledge, and then one where God is kind of looking in and seeing everything, the perceptualist view. In the Christian, ideas of foreknowledge, we have the two extremes, right? We have traditional and open. You know, traditional being, you know, Calvinist, foreknowledge equals foreordination. Open means God does not have either of those and, you know, essentially is living in the present with humans in order to figure out what the future truths are. Open view, simple foreknowledge view, the fact that God doesn't determine the future, genuine free will, but he knows what will happen in advance. Middle knowledge view is the fact that he knows the probabilities for sure, and they're not probabilities to that, you know, in that... anymore, and because he creates people and he knows exactly which direction they will go in any circumstance, creates them so that way, and therefore kind of knows everything ahead of time anyway. So, now, if you could bear with me again, and does God decide everything that happens, or does this world, in this world, or do we have free will? So, raise your hand if you think God decides everything that happens now. All right. How many people think we have free will? Okay, that was significantly less than we got on both sides to begin with. But, that's pretty much all I have, and I'm sorry if I completely confused you, but I really hope that you kind of, you know, if you had an idea of what, you know, you think this is, if you think we had lived in entirely free will, or if we lived completely under, you know, God's, what he wants, you know, your view has been challenged to some extent. So, yeah, thank you for listening.